You're listening to Michigan Politics, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Matt Bach.
We just did a webinar on medical marijuana, and more precisely recreational marijuana. We're going to talk about it here on our podcast. This is the podcast, Michigan Politics, huh? That's the name of it. It's by the Michigan Municipal League. I'm Matt Bach, Director of Communications for the Michigan Municipal League, and I'm very honored today to be joined by Chris Johnson, the General Counsel for the Michigan Municipal League, and Clyde Robinson, the General Counsel for the City of Kalamazoo. I always want to say Robertson, but I got it right that time, right?
Robinson? You did.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So as I explained, they just completed a webinar that was attended by almost 200 people online about the recreational marijuana issue. So we wanted to focus, we had Clyde in our building, so we wanted to use that as an opportunity to talk about this issue that's facing many communities right now. As we all hopefully know, those listening to this podcast, in November general election, Michigan voters overwhelmingly passed the recreational marijuana law. And I have these two gentlemen here to help us kind of navigate through what it means for our communities and what kind of questions our members are having. So I'll just turn it over to both of you. Either one of you can jump in. Talk about what's happened since the voters approved the law in early November, and what's our future, what's in store for our future on this issue.
Well, I think a lot of people have questions. I mean, yes. What does this mean beyond the fact that I can walk around with 2.5 ounces of marijuana in my possession? From the municipal policymaker's standpoint, that is, what can we do as a municipality to regulate possible businesses that want to come into our community and establish recreational businesses? What kind of advice do we give to our law enforcement officers who encounter people who have some quantity of marijuana in their possession? And then what do we do as employers in terms of the people who work for our municipality? And what are we going to do in permitting them to use or not marijuana in their private time?
So a whole bunch of array of issues that kind of this is kind of out there. We don't really know the answers to. But talk specifically about the law. It did take effect, I believe, early December. There was some wording in there that it had to wait for the election results to be certified. Is that correct? Technically, is that when it started?
Yes. Under Michigan constitutional law, an initiated law takes effect 10 days once the State Board of Canvassers certifies the results.
Okay.
And they certified the results of the November 6th election on, I think, November 26th. 10 days later, December 6th is when the law became effective pursuant to Michigan constitutional requirements.
So I see on Facebook or whatever, you know, particularly the day that happened, I think it was December 6th or December 7th, people are lighting up or showing, hey, you know, it's legal now, I can do whatever I want. And that's really not the case. I mean, isn't it, and there's still rules and things you have that the law sets up what you can and can't do.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you can't consume in public.
Okay.
You can't be consuming it while you're operating a motor vehicle or an airplane or even a motorboat.
Okay.
But people in the car with you can, while they can't smoke it, they can consume it in other forms or fashions.
So if it was in food or something like that.
And there's been some question as to, okay, you can smoke it in your, obviously, or smoke it or consume it in your home. Well, what about on the front porch? What about in the front yard or in the backyard? There's been some questions, at least from the law enforcement community, as to where that line is located in terms of if you're standing in your front yard, is that in public? And again, most municipalities are going to their attorneys saying, where's that line drawn?
Right. And you're listening to that's Clyde Robinson of the City of Kalamazoo. Chris, did you have something you wanted to jump in there as far as anything that we just talked?
In terms of the new act, I think you got to separate it into what individuals are now allowed to do and how they're going to regulate the commercial operations within a community. And they're two totally different things. The statute is real clear about what individuals may do. They may possess, they may smoke, they may use.
Grow.
They may grow, they may possess. And that is separate from any kind of regulation that a local municipality can put into effect.
Right.
And I think that's something that we need to make clear.
Before you jump into that part, I think it's also important that individuals cannot sell. That's a key thing for individuals. They can give it away, but they can't sell it, correct?
That's very true, and that creates probably a loophole that's big enough to drive a truck through.
Okay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you, but go ahead with the city component.
Well, what the communities can do is regulate the commercial operations, and they can opt in, by definition, they opt in if they do nothing.
Okay.
Unlike the medical marijuana, where you specifically had to opt in, you are opted in by virtue of the statute.
So you have to opt out,
which is one of the reasons why the Michigan Municipal League doesn't have any opt-in model ordinances, because by definition, you are in.
Right. And I think it's important to also note the Michigan Municipal League itself is an organization. We're a nonprofit organization that represents municipalities. We have not taken a stance on this issue. We're merely trying to inform our members and educate our members about, to try to have them make the best decision for their communities. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So what kind of questions are we getting from communities? What is the most common thing? I got to think there's probably some confusion, because we have had the medical marijuana laws in place for a couple of years now. So I think just as we're getting a kind of a handle on that, this recreational thing comes up. So and Chris already kind of pointed out there's some key differences in those two laws.
Well, I think a lot of communities are said, well, if we opted in or didn't for the medical side of it, what do we have to do in regard to the recreational side? And there's been some suggestion, I don't necessarily agree with it, that, well, if you've opted into the medical, you can't opt out on the recreational. I don't know that that's the case. The statute was a citizen-initiated statute there. From my perspective, it leaves a lot of questions. It could be a little more precise and clear for municipal officials and policymakers than it is, but we're going to be guided by the courts in the years to come to exactly what are the parameters, what are the edges of this thing look like, and where we need clarification.
Well, you talked about that in your webinar today, which was that the law, the way what the voters voted on it, I don't want to say it was poorly written, but maybe others could say that, but I don't really know if it's poorly written or not. I'm not a lawyer. But there's a lot of room open for interpretation, I guess would be a good way to say it, and that you expect a lot of these questions to be resolved in the courts.
It'll probably be resolved one of three ways, by the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs issuing rules that they're authorized to do by the statute, mm-hmm. by the legislature adopting a curative legislation, amending the statute, which requires a three-quarter vote of each house because it's an initiated statute, or by a Michigan Court of Appeals or Michigan Supreme Court deciding issues that come before it.
Okay, so it could go all the way up to the top.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. One thing I noticed that was interesting, one of the questions today is like, why can't they spell it correctly? Because marijuana, as most people know, is spelled with a J, and both laws, medical and recreational, they spell it with an H. Do you have any idea why that is? And it probably is driving spelling teachers crazy.
Well, at least my Webster says it's a legitimate spelling either way.
Oh, okay.
And I think that the use of the H is an anglicization of marijuana. I mean, as if you speak Spanish, the
sure.
J has the H sound.
Ah, okay.
And I think that goes back to and that's the way marijuana is spelled in Michigan Controlled Substances Law. And that's been the case since probably the 1950s or before.
Okay.
And so that's where it's derived from.
Because I remember I was a newspaper reporter before I started joining the league, and we always spelled it with a J, so I know newspapers have struggled with that. Well, that is how the law is written, so you kind of have to follow the proper style on that. So what are some of the questions you're hearing most from members and communities? Obviously, we do encourage them to when they have questions to consult with their local municipal attorney, but generally speaking, what kind of things are we hearing from them?
One of the most asked questions, I think, has been, if we opt out now, can we opt in later? And there's a big reluctance not to opt out now simply because they don't want to default to the opt-in position. So we've taken a pretty close look at it, and it appears to us that a community could opt out now, change its mind, and opt in later.
Okay. So they could say, you know, 6 months we'll revisit this, or 1 year we'll revisit this, that type of thing.
Right. You can always revise an ordinance.
Okay.
Municipalities always could. So that's one of the reasons why we believe that this is one that can be amended later.
One thing I heard, you know, the community's reason for they were deciding to opt out was they're like, well, if we don't opt out, maybe someone that wants to start a business is going to buy property. And so when this law becomes effect, they could use that as an argument and say, well, you didn't opt out, so we bought property. Now you have to let me in, whether that was your intention or not. Is that a sound reasoning? Are you hearing that kind of thought?
Well, I understand the argument, but under my understanding of Michigan law is that you're taking a risk. You're taking a gamble if you think that the local municipality is going to be regulating and permitting recreational. So you, on supposition, I'm going to secure this property. I don't think that gives you standing to then later challenge if the community says, we've thought about it and we decided not to permit it in our community. You're taking a gamble, and I don't think that gives you a right to say, I somehow need some recompense because I'm not able to now use the property that I took a gamble on. I don't think any court's going to recognize that as a legitimate claim.
Okay. One thing we talked about is that, you know, we are expecting now the state to come through with some rules and regulations. I think they have a year. Could you explain to me that part of the law or what that was?
One of the interesting things about this statute is it gives LARA the ability to set rules and regulations and gives them a pretty tight timeline, 1 year.
And LARA is our state licensing regulation agency, I think. I don't know if that's the acronym, but correct.
If LARA does not do that within a year, then people can submit applications directly to the local municipality. Mm. And when that happens, you know, communities are going to have to be in a position to put rules and regulations in place fairly quickly. It's our understanding, though, from speaking to officials from LARA that they are intending to meet the one-year deadline. And it appears that Governor-elect Whitmer is going to push for an earlier conclusion to that, okay, as possibly as quick as 6 months.
Oh, wow. Okay. That would be helpful to communities,
That would be very helpful to communities. On the other hand, communities have to watch what LARA is doing, because if they do it within 6 months, then the opt-out period moves up 6 months. So, so that deadline is really critical for local governments to watch if they're considering an opt-out situation.
Okay. Do we also expect our legislature to get involved and maybe pass some, like they have, I believe, with the medical, to pass some laws? Do you expect that to happen in the next several months?
Well, the lame duck actually considered some significant legislation which didn't pass.
Yeah, so they need like a 75% of the vote to pass something to oversee the overturn, that's the word I'm looking for.
Amend
whatever the voters approved in November.
Yes, and finding 3/4 of the legislature to do that has been difficult.
Yeah, okay. So you go ahead, Clark.
Well, but it's not impossible. The Medical Act, the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act, which is a citizen-initiated law that was adopted in 2008, I think has been amended by the legislature 3 times. Okay. So they've been able to muster the 3/4, but they've done it only kind of nibbling on the edges. There's nothing been really significant or a great overhaul.
Okay.
And what the legislation that was introduced in the lame duck was really didn't touch much in terms of what was initiated. It addressed some things, but then much of it was putting together a regulatory framework that mimicked the Facilities Licensing Act for on the medical side, and that was the bulk of the act. I would expect the legislature to maybe take up the issue after the first of the year when the new legislature takes office. Again, whether they can muster the 3/4 in each house and exactly what the scope of it is that they're going to do remains to be seen.
Interesting. Okay. One thing I've heard from members is they're actually looking at the election results and trying to help, can that, use that as try to give them some guidance. So if their city or village, they looked at the precinct by precinct results, if they show that the voters actually voted against the recreational marijuana, they're using that as an argument to maybe we should opt out, or vice versa, if people are voting in support, well, they're looking at it as maybe we should be, you know, let things ride and opt in. Is that, what do you think about that line of thinking? Is that, you know, is that a kind of a good way to look at it or not?
I'm not sure that it is, because they combine a couple of different things in the act. First, the individual part that we've talked about, and second, the commercial part. And maybe you were for one aspect and not the other.
Right. Just because I voted for it doesn't mean I want a business near my house, right?
Correct.
Okay.
I might want to smoke it, but I don't want to, you know, smoke, you know, in the town square.
Right. Right. That makes sense. What about one thing, it didn't come up in the webinar today, but we've had media calls to the league about this. What about cases pending? Like if someone has been convicted of, I know this is probably a little bit out of your expertise, but what kind of a direction are communities getting on that? So that they have, you know, someone arrested someone for possession or whatever?
Well, it's going to be up to each prosecutorial official.
Okay.
Number one, if somebody's been found guilty and they've been sentenced, they're going to have to wait the 5 years to get it expunged.
Okay.
If they got arrested sometime between or before December 6th for an offense, that's going to be up to that prosecutorial official whether they want to continue the prosecution or whether they're going to dismiss it because it became legal on the 6th. I know that many county prosecutors have taken, hey, how much was involved? If it's 2.5 ounces or less, hey, it's because it became legal, I'm not going to waste my time prosecuting that offense. On the other hand, if somebody was arrested with 5 pounds of marijuana, they're probably going to continue to prosecute that because that demonstrates not just somebody have a casual user.
Okay. That brings up an interesting question that kind of came up in the webinar. One of the questions was, like we already stated, part of the law is you can't sell it. But are there ways people are already kind of trying to get around it? Someone posted in the comments on the webinar about, you know, maybe someone is selling, you know, chocolate, and as part of the chocolate you get a free gift of marijuana or whatever. I mean, is that kind of thing going to be happening? You think we're going to see that type of stuff?
It actually is happening already.
Okay.
Here in Ann Arbor, that particular merchant is selling chocolate, and maybe somebody's giving some stuff away as well.
Okay.
So,
I joked at a seminar that the rolling papers are $100, but the marijuana is free.
Oh wow! Okay, that's interesting. So, is that allowed? I mean, is that okay?
I think it is. If you look at the technical requirements of the statute, it's a loophole that's big enough to drive a truck.
That's what you said at the onset. That's interesting.
I think where it might be a problem is the statute talks about advertising it openly. I suppose an argument could be made, even with that type of an arrangement, that we're giving away the marijuana for free, but you have to pay for something else in order to get it. I don't know how a judge may take view of that in terms of, and particularly if you're advertising it openly.
Yeah.
That's going to be something each county prosecutor is going to probably have to take a look at and figure out whether they want to pursue it. The other question is that a misdemeanor or is it a $500 civil infraction? It may not be worth going after it because the penalty is so small.
Interesting. Huh. Have we been, of course, I think Michigan is now, correct me if I'm wrong, the 14th or 15th state to pass a recreational. Have we been looking at other states? Obviously, Colorado was the first at league convention and events. We've had speakers from Colorado talk about their experiences. Have we been looking at Colorado? I mean, are they a good example to go by? Or what kind of lessons learned are we trying to maybe do here in Michigan that we've learned from them?
In the end, this is a Michigan-initiated statute. Folks put certain terms and conditions in our statute that aren't in all the other statutes.
Interesting. Okay.
For example, if you're going to limit the number of commercial establishments, you're going to have to use competitive process.
Mm.
What does that mean?
Okay.
And that particular term probably is going to invite a lot of litigation. So we don't have the answers as to what's going to be acceptable or not. It was obvious that the marijuana industry was very much behind this in terms of making those kind of requirements involved with the statute. So follow the money.
Right. Well, I think, Clyde, you raised a really good point during the webinar. You said the statutes are written from the perspective of the marijuana industry. So obviously it's going to be in their favor, correct?
True. The other thing, going back to your previous question, we sometimes can't get very much guidance from other states. A good example is if somebody has marijuana, that they've engaged in some other crime and marijuana is taken from them, and do you have to give it back? Now, Colorado, even though there's they amended their constitution to permit legal marijuana, their Supreme Court, and I think a 4-3 decision, said no, law enforcement doesn't have to give it back. California had the same question, but they said, yeah, you have to give it back.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
It's using other states, while it might be helpful from some perspective, there's a split of decision, so you know, we're going to end up making our own rules in Michigan. The other thing is, Michigan is going to be somewhat unique. Unlike California or Colorado, we have an international border with a country that has legalized marijuana.
Yeah, just recently.
We are bordering on three states, Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, that don't have legal marijuana. And so unlike California, Nevada, Colorado, which are all legal now, we have those unique circumstances. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because Michigan is going to be the marijuana capital of the Midwest.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that could be. Well, it kind of leads to more of my next question. Is this could potentially be an economic boom for Michigan or not?
I guess that's a wait and see question.
Okay.
And see what becomes of this. I know that there's money out there, and how much of it we will see in terms of assisting municipalities and job creation, it's a wait and see. I have no idea.
And it's still, marijuana federally is still illegal, right? I mean, so is there still that conflict, or doesn't seem as to be, because there, so many states have already done
there
it?
There still is a conflict. The federal government has it on Schedule 1, which means you may not possess it, period.
Okay.
Period.
Yeah.
There's a interesting dichotomy then, obviously, for the employee situation, especially employees that are involved with law enforcement. The feds do not permit marijuana and firearms to go together.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't allow it. So okay. If you want to, you know, carry in a lot of situations, or even purchase a firearm, and you've got a marijuana card, or you've been convicted of some sort of marijuana crime, you cannot possess.
And I'd like to follow up on that, because there's another dichotomy within federal law. Congress has adopted a continuing resolution that's usually been added to appropriations bills that prohibit the Department of Justice from prosecuting marijuana offenses in medical marijuana states, that is, regarding medical marijuana, that kind of hands off. But that continuing resolution doesn't touch on recreational marijuana. So ostensibly, U.S. attorneys in Michigan, while they probably can't prosecute federal violations involving medical marijuana, they are completely at will to prosecute offenses under federal law involving recreational marijuana.
Hmm. Okay.
And that goes to the point that Chris was making. There is a federal statute that says you can't have a firearm and be in possession of a controlled substance, and that's what marijuana is under federal law.
Interesting. There's also, related to that, that makes me think of, drug and gun-free safety zones with schools and stuff, and there is a stipulation in the law about 1,000 feet. You can't have a business 1,000 feet from a school, I think. Explain that to me and what that part of it is.
That's one of the things that the law, the statute provides, in that in order for the state to grant a license, the proposed location of a business can't be any closer than 1,000 feet from a public, pre-existing public or private school that provides any form of education K through 12.
Okay.
Now, preschools aren't mentioned.
Mm.
And obviously neither are colleges or universities, they are not mentioned. So ostensibly, if you're within that 1,000 feet from a preschool or a university or a community college, the state would have to issue that license.
Interesting. I think I read somewhere that there are some villages, maybe even in our state, that are so small and they have enough schools that there's really no way to actually put a business in there physically. Is that possible, potentially?
I suppose it could be, okay, because of that 1,000-foot rule that's in the now. That said, the statute does say that a municipality can reduce that 1,000 feet if it chooses to do so.
Oh, okay. They can't make it bigger, but they can.
I don't think they can make it bigger, but they can certainly make it smaller.
Okay, good. Well, I did kind of want to wrap up here. Is there any other burning issues? It's kind of a bad pun. I shouldn't have used that. But any other issues out there that you think is important for our listeners and maybe particularly our municipal listeners of this podcast?
Well, I think we haven't really addressed it, but the employment situation is a critical one for municipal governments to look at. What policy will you have for your own employees? And just the general public should be aware of the fact that, yes, it might be legal in Michigan to have recreational marijuana on your person, but your employer, municipal or private, might have a policy that prohibits it, and that policy will prevail over the recreational statute. So,
how is that so? I think people say, "Well, why is that? Well, why does that one prevail over the other one?"
Because it's right in the statute.
Okay, it is clearly stated in there. So you couldn't obviously. So, if, like the Michigan Municipal League, for example, does drug testing of employees at the time of hire. So if you came back positive for marijuana, that could be a legitimate reason to not hire somebody. Is that kind of what we're talking about?
That's exactly what we're talking about. And it would apply to not only public employers, but private employers as
okay.
well.
So they can still have those kind of policies in
yes.
place. And I mean, just like you're not supposed to come to work drunk with alcohol. I mean, it's the same kind of...
It's the same concept, exactly.
Yeah.
However, you can ban it, though. Unlike yeah. alcohol, which will get out of your system quickly, marijuana does not leave your system very quickly.
So if you test positive, it's been a couple of weeks or whatever, that
could be a problem for you.
Yeah. Okay. Depending on how much you're using, how often you're using it, the marijuana can stay within your cells, oftentimes your hair, fingernails and the like, 30 days.
Okay. Do you see our community members redoing a lot of their employment policies because of this, or do you think what they have in place will still cover it, or they don't have to change it? Or
they don't have to change it. They may want to re-examine it. Actually, we were talking before the webinar about this very issue. Do you separate employees by class of employees? Law enforcement officers treated differently, for example, than somebody operating data input or something.
Sure.
Could be, a whole host of morale problems to say, this class of employees may and this class of employees may not. Mm. Or do you want to have a uniform system where you don't let any of the employees?
Yeah.
And you've also got people who drive heavy equipment,
sure.
like snowplow drivers and the like. They have a CDL, commercial driver's license. They're subject under, I think, federal law to be tested, particularly if they get into an accident, they're immediately tested. And if they show something in their system and it's prohibited, they could lose their job or be suspended. The other issue that in addition to the morale problem, is that you've got oftentimes employees represented by a collective bargaining agreement. And I guess, foresee, depending on the position that the union may take, is that'd be the whole point of whether you have a zero tolerance policy might be subject to collective bargaining, where a union might say, well, yeah, okay, you can have your zero tolerance policy, but what's the give that what we want in exchange for going along with that?
Oh, interesting. So become a negotiation tool.
Could become,
something
yeah.
in there. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Any other items that I think glad that you brought that up, Chris?
Those were the big ones.
Okay. All right, good. Well, thank you very much. And I should note that Clyde has written a white paper on this issue. I do have a question for you about that, Clyde. So you got in municipal law many, many years ago. We won't say how long. But do you ever expect to become a marijuana expert when you started out?
No, I did not. I went to law school at the University of Michigan, and when I was going there in the, and I'll say in the 70s and late 70s, you know, they would have the hash bash every April.
Yeah.
But that's as close as I ever got to it. I had no idea that I would be engaged in now almost 40 years later, knowing as much as I do about marijuana.
Yeah, and the white paper is kind of serve what? Is it kind of a guideline for our members as they try to make some of these decisions?
It raises some of the issues, raises some of the questions, takes some issues that you might want to think about. But at the end of the day, it's my take on it. And I just say kind of the old Arsenio Hall, like, things that make you want to go,
Yeah, exactly.
And so, and when you have one of those issues, contact your municipal attorney so as to get the guidance that
okay.
you need.
Good. And that white paper, and also a resource page on medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, is available on the Michigan Municipal League's website, which is mml.org. You can find that white paper and related information there. Again, thank you, Clyde Robertson. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for joining me today on Michigan Politics, Huh?
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Chris and Clyde. Up next, I'm going to talk to Jennifer Richterink of the Michigan Municipal League about some of the issues and that she's seeing and hearing from our communities regarding this topic on recreational and medical marijuana. All right. So I'm now joined by, this is Matt Bach, Director of Communications with the Michigan Municipal League, and we're continuing on here with the Michigan Politics, Huh? podcast, and I'm now very happy to be joined by Jennifer Richterink, a legislative associate in our Lansing office. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks, Matt.
To the podcast. It's fun, isn't it?
It is fun.
It's funny to say hi to you because we see each other quite a bit. It's like I listen to one podcast where it's a husband and wife, and they're always like, hello, Paul. Hello, Jane. But it's like they haven't seen each other, so the fact that I'm seeing you and say, hi, Jen, how are you? It's like it's kind of weird.
It is.
So,
the perk of the podcast, we're not being videoed.
So probably to no selection of your own, you are our kind of our the league's, one of our recreational and medical marijuana experts. Is that something you ever thought you'd become?
No. No, not at all.
And how did this fall under on your lap? What I know our legislative associates have different topics. So how did this one fall under what you do?
So this falls under municipal services,
okay.
Just kind of like liquor and fireworks. So this is one of the issues I cover for the league.
Yeah. So what do you, what's been your involvement? Particularly, let's focus on, for this conversation, the recreational marijuana, which, as our listeners probably know, got approved by voters in November, took effect in, I think, mid-December sometime. And what are you hearing from our members? What's going on there in our communities?
So lots of questions. Yes, it was passed by the ballot. Just a lot of questions. What does it mean? Opting out versus not opting out. The law seems to be clear as mud.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately,
<isn't>
no, not at all. And unfortunately, a lot of times in working with a lot of our municipal attorneys, the answer is, well, we think it's this, but until it's litigated,
yeah.
we won't know for sure.
So everybody's pretty much thinking a lot of this stuff's going to end up in the courts?
Yes.
So is that...
Unfortunately.
Is that kind of what happened with medical marijuana from a few years ago?
Yes. Now, I wasn't working on this with the league back in 2008 when the original medical marijuana law passed. But yes, there were quite a few cases that were litigated over zoning and different issues.
Okay. Now, how are the two different, the medical marijuana and the recreational marijuana? I know some saying, well, we've already opted out of medical marijuana, so we don't need to do anything with recreation. Is that true, or what should they
That's
do?
That's not true.
Okay.
So, there are three, because there's the 2008 MMA.
Medical marijuana.
Yes, the 2016 Medical Marijuana Facilities Licensing Act,
okay.
The MMFLA.
Has to do with like buildings and things?
Yes, in the registered, so it took that patient caregiver model under the original voter-initiated law,
yeah.
and put a kind of commercial framework to it.
Okay.
So now recreational is doing that kind of, again, commercial framework, but for recreational, you don't have to be a medical patient. But a lot of things, definitions are not the same, plant counts aren't the same, and if the biggest under the MMFLA, you have to opt in. So you have to take...
Under the medical marijuana, you have to opt in. So go ahead.
And other recreational, you have to... Your affirmative action is to opt out.
So you're in unless you opt out.
Correct.
Okay, that's a big difference.
It is. And it's very confusing.
Yes, it is. So... I'm hearing different things. Remember, some got on it right away and opted out. Others were kind of taking a more wait-and-see approach. What are you seeing communities do?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of communities that are opting out. Even if that's temporarily, they want to see the state's rules and regulations come out.
Okay.
Once those are promulgated, then they'll have another discussion of, do we want to stay opted out or do we want to start to license commercial establishments in our communities?
Right. What are the dilemmas the communities are faced with? Because it did pass fairly overwhelmingly, I think, in our state. Are they looking at how their locals people voted, in their precincts and trying to make decisions on that? Or how are they trying to decide these issues?
They are looking a lot of them at, what was the percentage, if it passed or didn't pass. But one thing to consider is people went to the ballot and they did vote to approve recreational marijuana, but they also voted to allow their local community to decide to either opt in or not opt in.
Because that was part of the provision in the
right.
language.
Right. So by their, affirmative vote of they wanted to see legalized recreational marijuana, they were also voting to allow their community to decide if commercial establishments, recreational marijuana is going to be in communities across the state.
Right.
It's just the licensing of commercial establishments.
Okay. So, we don't have a whole lot to turn to because I think Michigan's, the 14th state to take on?
Something like
recreational.
That, yes.
We have had people from Denver and Colorado, which was one of the first out here. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, in Denver or in the state, a lot of the communities there opted out too.
Yes. I remember Charles saying that it was...
Charles, I forget his last name, from the
I know,
city
I'm drawing
attorney's
a blank.
Office in Denver.
He was great.
We'll look it up.
But
sorry about that.
And he's one of your... You have a podcast
yeah,
with
I
him.
I do. I can't remember his last name.
I want to say Mitchell
I
or
think that's
something
close.
Like that.
I think that might be right.
But he had said that they're urbanized population centers opted in, and most of the other smaller communities and counties did not.
Okay. Are we getting any kind of temperature here that's going to happen here? Or?
Early indications are bigger, more urbanized centers are looking to opt in or not opt in, but are not opting out.
Yeah.
But then we also have some that opted into the MMFLA that are opting out of recreational right now because they want to get those establishments up and running under medical and then start to work under the recreational framework. Because again, they're two separate systems.
Right.
And because one was the legislature, mm-hmm. and the recreational was a citizen initiative.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to amend and change the new recreational law. It takes a super majority of the legislature
it's
to
like
change.
Like two-thirds or, two,
right.
or three-quarters or something like that?
Yeah, two-thirds. Okay. It's not to say that, or three-quarters, I'm sorry. It's not to say that it can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be a heavy lift.
Yeah. So do they have the same, I think with medical marijuana, they kind of had like a laundry list of things like we want distribution centers, or we don't want storefronts, but we do want growing facilities. Mm-hmm. Do you have that same kind of thing with the recreational?
So that's a question that there are differing opinions on within the recreational law. It says you opt out, or if you don't opt out, then you can limit the number. But some read it as you have to allow all the license types, but you can limit within those license types. Others are interpreting it that you can just pick and choose license types. So I think we'll wait and see what some of the rules and regulations from LARA and the Bureau of Medical or the Bureau of Marijuana says to kind of see.
Right.
Or we'll see when somebody gets sued and the case gets litigated,
right.
how that the findings of the courts.
And our new governor, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, she came into office, and I think the law did give LARA, which is Licensing and Regulations Agency,
yep.
I'm not sure the exact acronym, but they had such period of time, I think it was a year, to kind of put the rules in place. But she was encouraging them to do it within 6 months. Is that where things stand?
So I don't know if the governor came out directly and encouraged them to, you know, speed up. Okay. I do know that under the law, the department has a year, but they will take directive from one. They have a new director.
Okay.
They also, the attorney general and the governor's office. And so depending on if there are directives, mm-hmm. You know, they may have to, but in all the conversations I've had with the department, they are anticipating taking that full year to get up and running.
Okay. So should communities be doing something in the meantime, or should they wait for those to kind of hash?
Well, they should be definitely having that conversation locally about what makes the most sense for their community. Are they going to opt out permanently, temporarily? Are they going to be open to recreational establishments? If so, how many? There's a lot of different factors. And then looking at their zoning, where would makes the most sense for these to go? Mm-hmm. How many? You have to look at the proximation to schools, daycares, churches, you know, those kinds of things. There's a lot of different moving parts. So that conversation, if it's not already happening, needs to start. Okay. Very soon.
And yeah, I live in Muddy Township, and they did decide to opt out. I think they were going to revisit it in like 6 months, kind of waiting to see what Laura is doing. And a lot of communities are kind of going that route. Like you said, temporarily opt out or maybe permanently opt out.
Yeah, there's they're trying to protect themselves. So if someone does want to open or is going to apply for a recreational establishment license and they start doing, they buy a property and they start making investments, and then at some point the community opts out, they want to not have I'm grandfathered in because while I was making these investments, doing these things, you had not opted out.
Oh.
And so now I have a vested interest and you have to grandfather me in. You have to talk to an attorney to see if that's a standing argument, but that is some of the fears. So that's why you do see a lot of communities opting out right now until there's more information.
Right. There was a local Detroit area article, I think published last week, talked about, the headline was "These 60 Michigan Cities Have Opted Out of Recreational Marijuana Sales," and they had someone, I think, that was kind of pro from the industry, and they were saying, well, really, communities shouldn't be necessarily rushing in to opt out because they still have zoning and things that they can kind of safeguard. Is that, what's your kind of, you were actually quoted in that article, I believe, what's your kind of response to that thinking?
That's with zoning. You have non-conforming uses. And so if something is allowable and somebody starts to do something and down the road you change your zoning to make it not allowable, then they're grandfathered in.
Okay.
So back to what I was just talking about a minute ago, I think that is the fear. Yeah, there is zoning.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to safeguard and protect themselves in that unnecessary liability, that's why you see communities opting out until there's more information. Laura has been great at communicating and with their timelines and things. So I think as they start to move forward, they'll be able to give a better timeline of when exactly they expect the rules or the first set of draft rules. They usually have draft rules, comment period. Another difference between medical and recreational is under medical, there's a licensing board that approves licenses.
Okay.
Under recreational, there's not. It's just the department that will be doing those.
And the department meaning Laura?
Yes.
Or this bureau that you mentioned?
The Bureau of Marijuana Regulation.
That's what they're going to be called?
Yeah. Before they were BUMMR, BMMR, and now they are just BMR.
Oh, okay.
So I think they're still kind of bummer.
Because they had medical in there for the extra M.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I guess it'd be bummer, maybe, just like less M's. So you kind of been in local communities. I believe tonight you're going to South Haven.
I am.
So what are you hearing when you go to these meetings and councils? What kind of questions are you typically asked?
So more, what are communities across, you know, what are other communities doing?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interest in that. There's a lot of interest in what is the state's timeline? Because under the Recreational Act, if the state is not up, if Laura and the Bureau is not up within a year accepting applications, there is a municipal license that says the applicant can go straight to the municipality and they shall issue a license. So that is very worrisome to communities. And right now, I mean, we have full faith that the department will be up and running within their timeline, but that isn't in law. And so...
So the communities have to make their own application forms and do everything, potentially.
Yeah, potentially. And the other thing is, in reading the law, it looks like that municipal license would supersede any kind of state regulations or rules as well. So, you know, we very much want to see that Lara gets their rules and regulations published and finalized and adopted, and they're accepting applications within the time frame.
Right. Otherwise, you just could have a real mess in your hands with different communities allowing different things and everything else. They couldn't regulate, like, number of plants that someone could have in their house, because those things are kind of
already the possession limits, all those things are already through zoning. I think we can regulate pretty much like under medical was everything except purity and pricing, so we're going to be seeing that now. The department has said with medical, and again, if they start seeing where there's issues, then they would look at promulgating a rule that starts to, you know, step on local control of zoning. You know, if we see some crazy things around hours of operation, things like that.
Because it's interesting, because we are all about local control, having local communities make decisions that are best for their residents and having that. But at the same time, we would like some kind of guidelines from the state to follow.
Correct.
Because it's kind of a tricky situation
there.
What kind of rules and regulations would Laura be setting up? What kind of questions would they try to address, maybe?
So I think, just like under medical, they looked at the stacking of licenses. They looked at...
What does that mean, stacking of licenses?
So if an entity or a person can apply for more than one license or multiple license types.
Like have medical and recreational, that kind of thing?
No, that's already allowed in the law. But so if somebody wants to apply for a grower as well as a processor, things like that.
Okay.
I'm hoping the rules, if not, we will have to probably look at something within a legislative change, because one gray area right now is that the law does not address the selling of, say, accessories. And so you can gift marijuana. Mm. So
and that's in place right now.
That is in place right now.
You can't sell it, but you could have it and give
right,
it
and you can gift it as long as you're under, you know, your personal possession limits.
Right.
I can sell you this $50 coffee mug.
Yes.
And I'll gift you this marijuana.
Yeah, and that's happening, and that's probably...
Right, and you don't have to have a license. Uh-huh. You don't know if that marijuana has been tested.
Right.
You know, that just opens up a lot of other possible issues. So I think that is a gray area that they're going to have to look at quickly.
Yeah, because that's already... I think there's some articles about things like that happening.
So, yeah.
Interesting. So a lot to be coming up. So what's kind of your job in the next, 6 months to a year as Laura works on its regulations? What do you see your role? Are there some legislative things going to be happening, or because of that supermajority thing, is that going to be tough?
You know, it's going to be tough, but yes, I think there are still some things they would like to look at, fixes. We had a Senate bill that was introduced in lame duck. It didn't go anywhere, but it was trying to address some issues that had already been raised before the law was even, voted and gone into effect. So I think we might see something coming forward.
What were some of those things it was trying to look at?
It's possession limits, especially the number of plants in a home, looking at, we talk about Colorado, Oregon, some of the other states out there, and looking at changes they had to make.
Okay.
They went back and changed those personal possession limits, especially when it came to the number of plants per person that's 21 and over in the same home, because you could start to look at quite a lot of marijuana.
Okay.
Depending on how many people over 21 you have in a home.
Okay. So if you had like college roommate situation, and there's like 5-6 people living in the house, they're all...
They each get 12 plants, plus 2.5 ounces, plus 10 ounces in a locked box. You know, it's a lot of marijuana.
Yeah.
And so looking at, those possession limits, the home grow, trying to think, it'll come to me, I'm sure, here.
So, and that was, I think, Senate Majority Leader Meekoff's bill?
Yep, Senate Bill 1243, I believe it was.
Will there be, that required a supermajority. Will there be tweaks and stuff that they could do now that don't require that? Or is there pretty much anything having to do with this issue is going to need that?
I would think as long as something through the rules and regulations falls under the purview of Lara and through the Bureau, I think we'd be okay. If somebody starts to question, are you overstepping the intention of the law, which, again, is very gray in some areas.
Yeah.
So,
being that Michigan's the only Midwest state that's going to allow recreational marijuana, you see it kind of kind of being a border issue where, like, you know, along, you know, Ohio and Indiana, and maybe even in the UP along Wisconsin borders, that we'll see, like the fireworks used to be, you see all the fireworks things at the border?
Possibly. So, you know, and one of the big issues still is federally, this is a Schedule I drug, and
right.
It's illegal.
It's against the law.
So that does bring into some issues, especially in our municipalities that have their own low-income housing assistance programs or other federal grants where they're receiving dollars.
Oh.
And some of the paperwork that they're required to sign. Yeah, how do we start to make sure that because under our recreational, it talks about a landlord can tell you that you cannot smoke
right.
In the dwelling, but not necessarily they cannot tell you that you can't possess marijuana. So other forms of marijuana, you just couldn't smoke it.
Mm.
And so,
but that's interesting because there is an odor without smoking. You could still, there could be a nuisance.
Possibly.
By some.
Yeah, possibly.
So.
But it gets more into that federal assistance that they're receiving to live in those units.
Right. And about losing their grants or whatever they have from the federal government if they're somehow violating federal law.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. Is that a legitimate concern, you think, or where does that stand?
I think when it comes to housing, it definitely is. Now, some of the, say, USDA rural grant for, you know, some kind of infrastructure project, it gets a little more far-fetched that, you know, well, this water could go to be supporting a grow operation.
Right.
You know, that gets a little farther removed. But when it comes to the housing commissions and things like that, and they're intaking that money, and then they could possibly have individuals living within, how do they tell someone living within this federally funded housing project that you can't do this when our state laws specifically says you can.
Right. Okay. And we have put out, the League has put out a number of tools and resources for members to kind of follow. I think I mentioned in the previous segment that Clyde Robinson of city attorney for the city of Kalamazoo has written a white paper.
Yes.
Has that been helpful to be able to point people to that?
It has been helpful. The other great thing, and Clyde has been so helpful to the League in answering questions and reviewing legislation early on and giving feedback, as well as a number of municipal attorneys that we work with.
Yeah.
But Clyde helped pen that. Within that white paper, and maybe he talked about this, there is a nice chart in there that compares the three marijuana laws to each other.
Oh, okay.
And so that right there gives a great comparison of what's like.
Okay.
What's different.
Okay.
And where some of the kind of unknowns or hiccups are.
Right.
So,
and we also have, I believe, sample ordinances of communities that have opted out.
We do.
Do we have any communities like opted in or actually passed anything to do that?
So
they don't need to.
We have had a number of requests for a draft ordinance to opt in, but we do not have one. And if someone out there listening to this has passed one, please send it to us.
Okay.
Because reading the recreational that you don't have to affirmatively opt in.
Yeah.
We haven't seen any ordinances because they're just opted in.
Right. I've just seen some articles where, or I think, you know, managers commenting where they're like, well, we didn't have enough votes to pass the opt out, so I guess we're in.
You right.
know, or
you're in.
It was.
And they may change some zoning ordinances to deal with that. But that's not an opt in ordinance. It's just they're changing their zoning to deal with marijuana establishments.
Okay. And you could find that white paper and the other ordinance examples on our website, which is mml.org. And again, thank you to my guests today's show, Clyde Robinson of the City of Kalamazoo, and Chris Johnson here of the Michigan Municipal League. And then, of course, Jennifer Rigg-Trink. Thank you for joining me here today on Michigan Politics. Huh? Anything else to add? One last second. Anything I missed?
Just that we will continually having more informational and educational sessions for our members as information becomes available.
That's a good point. We do have our Capitol Conference coming up in March. Hopefully this episode will air before that. And I'm assuming medical marijuana and recreational marijuana will be one of the topics on the agenda.
We will have Andrew Brisbo, the director of the Bureau of Marijuana Regulation, giving us an update of where the state's at and any other updates that they have, and then allow our members to be able to ask some questions, get some clarity.
He's with the state, you said?
He is. He is the director of Bummer.
Oh, wow. That's great. So we got the source. We got the person that
yes.
knows. So that's great. So that information about our Capitol Conference can also be found on our website, which is mml.org. Jennifer, thank you again for joining us, and everyone listening today on the podcast, Michigan Politics, huh?
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Thanks.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.